final hour of your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. The hashtag to use on Twitter is TCNT as well. We're going to get to more audio from last night's Tucker Carlson, Bobulinski, whatever you want to call him, interview.
Doesn't really matter. You know who we're talking about. Yeah. Just Google it.
Yeah. The guy who's dropping all the dirt on the Bidens.
Yeah, and go watch it.
Has all the credibility in the world right now.
Whistleblower. Yeah, Tony Bobulinski. I'm just glad that I landed with the B because I was calling him Lulu Binsky. I was calling him Kulabinski. I finally got it right after last night because I was just so stunned by what I was watching. He said that he met with Joe Biden at a conference and that he met afterward with Jim Biden for 2 hours at the Peninsula Hotel, where Jim Biden walked through his history in his own words, stating all the work he did to get Joe Biden elected initially in Delaware and even through the family history and the role that he had played in it. He said he was skeptical of what was going on because of his high-level security clearance as a military official and his knowledge about needing to report gifts and talking about their dealings with the Chinese. And he says, I'm thinking about the Biden family. Like, how are they doing this? And I remember looking at Jim Biden and saying, how are you guys getting away with it? Like, aren't you concerned? And he looked at me and laughed a little bit and said, plausible deniability. Plausible deniability.
He said with a laugh.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. Paul calling all the way from Florida. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, guys. A couple quick questions. There's no doubt I thought that he was very credible, and there's no doubt that Joe Biden is corrupt. I mean, he's got like four houses. One's worth like $9 million. Was actually featured in the Wall Street Journal Global Mansion Real Estate section, right? So how do you do that on a senator's salary? So I don't think there's any issue there. A couple things I was hoping you could answer for me, though. I really wish Tucker would have asked this. What was the business? What is CECF and what is Sinohawk Enterprises? I mean, were they just setting up to sell iPhone cases on Amazon, or is this like we're selling weapons to, you know, terrorists or moving, you know, big money around and all kinds of shady stuff? I'd like to know that. And then if that's the case, the one thing that is nagging at me is then wouldn't Bobulinski be kind of part of that if he kind of inherently knew he was setting up? And that's what he was good at, setting up these structures for these kind of shady deals. It's one thing to say you're worried about your family's integrity and reputation, but if you kind of knew you were setting
Well, did you, Paul, did you watch the interview? Paul, did you watch the interview?
I did.
Okay, so you remember the part, you remember the part where he talked about, you know, as soon as he started to realize what level some of these negotiations were happening at, when the Chinese company, the energy company, wanted to buy, what is 16 or 19% share, I forget the exact number, a share of the Russian energy company. That's when he said, okay, you know, I need to step back from this. This is bigger than I realized. He thought he was just being brought in to add some legitimacy, some credibility, and some business expertise to setting up these international deals with other companies because he has experience in that arena. But it sounded to me, anyway, what I took away from it was once he realized how high up the chain it went in the Communist Party with China, that Chairman Xi was involved, and that Hunter Biden even said he was acting as Xi's personal attorney in the United States, that appears to be when Tony put his hands up and said, my name's Paul, that's between y'all.
Yeah, so that's where money would have started flowing, right? Is these deals,
quote
unquote, are getting structured and set up. That's kind of what I thought. Yeah, it's definitely shady. It was a really good interview. I was left asking more questions a little bit, but no, I appreciate that. Good to get your take on it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, I mean the Sinohawk was just a holdings company. I mean that's just in the simplest terms. And when you look at the context of what the interview was about with Tucker Carlson last night, you know, it seemed pretty clear they needed to get to the core of the issue. And I just may say this really quick ahead of our conversation with Lacey Johnson, and we'll get back to more of this audio from Bobulinski last night. If the media were actually doing their due diligence, then they could talk about these things. They could get into this. They could dissect it. They could talk about the business. But again, there's so much silence. I mean, all the silence apart from Fox News when it comes to these revelations. I mean, you're not even going to get a chance to even see it dissected and broken down or even examination of Bobulinski. He's put himself out there. He's worthy of examination, making these claims, as is Sinohawk Holdings Company as well. But again, the silence is deafening right now. It really is incredible. And it reminds me an awful lot, getting into our conversation with Lacey Johnson. It reminds me an awful lot locally about the media silence over all of the accusations when it comes to Representative Ilhan Omar and the investigations and all the controversy surrounding her.
Yep.
They, you know, the local media is just an extension of the DFL, more than willing to just be silent on those particular issues. And even when they do interviews, to just, you know, lob up softballs for their particular candidates to just kind of lob back to them and have their back.
How about something as simple as the status of Ilhan Omar's residency?
No, yes. Does
she even live in the district anymore? Lacey Johnson, who is running against Ilhan Omar. Great to have you on the program, sir.
Great to be on your program.
Does she live in the district? Can you answer this for us?
Well,
because it sounds to me like every indication that I got is that she moved to D.C. to be with Tim Minette. In fact, there's a Teen Vogue interview with Ilhan Omar and her daughter, where her daughter talks about, you know, having to, how hard it was to move to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I think you're correct. I know I've seen some photos of her out on the balcony with her husband. He smoked a cigarette. I don't know if she was smoking a cigarette. But, so I know they're living in Washington, D.C. I hear rumors that she have a place downtown. But regardless of where she lives, I know we hardly ever see her in our community unless it's for a photo op. And I know I very seldom see her talking about real issues within the district unless it's at left-wing AOC type of propaganda, the squad type of propaganda. So she's really not in our district mentally, physically, or any other way as far as I'm concerned.
Are the people in the district aware of this? I mean, I know you need to go out there, Lacey Johnson, and talk about your message and what you want to do for the people. And obviously that's got to be first and foremost, I would imagine. But I'm just wondering, you know, are the people that you want to go and represent, are they aware of just how absent Representative Ilhan Omar is? Let me add something to it. There's an interview here with Axios talking about how she expects Joe Biden to pivot to the left if elected. And she says, we will have a cohort of progressives that are very clear about their objectives, wanting implementation of Medicare for All, the Green New Deal, and raising the minimum wage, and not allow for fracking. And I'm like, I can't imagine that with everything going on in Minneapolis right now, that the people in this district, that those are the hot button top of mind issues that they're concerned about.
Well, a couple of things. You hit on it earlier. Of course, most people are not aware of what she's actually doing or what she's actually not doing or saying or not saying because the media is protecting her. Secondly, there are those who, even if they knew, they wouldn't care. And so that's what I'm really up against. So we've been trying to get our message out to at least the people, and let's make them aware of what she's really doing and not doing and not saying. But it's tough, as you indicated.
We hear a lot, and I don't know if this is due to the bubble that we exist in or the circles that we run in, but we hear a lot about the frustration that residents have with Ilhan Omar on the issues that you've been touching on, and then the main one being that she doesn't really seem to be involved in her district, especially. I mean, there might not be a congressional district in the country that's experienced as much tumult and unrest as your district has, the district that you're running in. But still, I hear complaints and I hear a lot of criticism that she's essentially absent. She's not involved. She's not really looking out for the district as a whole. She's got a very specific constituency of people that are benefiting from her being in there. Has that been your experience as you've been out there campaigning and door knocking and talking to constituents? Have they shared similar frustrations with you, or is that something that might be a bit overblown? Being, you know, again, running in the bubble that we tend to run in.
Oh no, that's a lot of frustration. In fact, I'll go even further to say frustration. There's a lot of people out there, and I don't necessarily agree with this from a person that who just don't like her, and they don't like her politics. They don't like her selfishness. They don't like her ambition. They don't like the fact that she's part of this whole Machiavellian type of left wing cabal that's trying to take this country down a rabbit hole. A rabbit hole of lawlessness, a rabbit hole of godlessness. So a lot of people are aware of what she's doing and where her true loyalties lie. And it's just amazing the number of people that come up to me when I'm out in public. Number one, they say, if they don't know, they ask my name. Then they let me know they voted for me. and then they go off on Ms. Omar and how bad she is for this community. And these coming from some staunch Democrats. A lot of the staunch Democrats that have voted for me, and they indicated that, they have worked with this lady personally. And they've seen up close and personal who she is and how she is. I also have members from her community that's working very closely with me, who have told me what they feel about her as a person and as a politician and as a professional, who just don't like her. So that's a lot of dissatisfaction with her. Now, is it enough to overcome all the advantages, the fact that she's in a plus 26 district for the Democrats, the fact you can give her probably another 10 points for the voter fraud and cheating, the fact that she could probably get another 10 points for the Democratic corrupt machine that go pick up voters and give them ballots and tell them who to vote for. So it's a question whether we can overcome that. But there have been times when we've overcome it on the national level, plus 45 advantage that the Democrats seem to have. And I think we can do so on the local level. I just have to get out and work hard and get my message out.
I'm glad you brought up the ballot harvesting issue. That was going to be my next question. With the Project Veritas video that broke a few weeks ago, obviously caused quite a stir locally. But it's been kind of quiet since then. There really hasn't been a whole lot of follow-up on that. In the meantime, Ilhan Omar is tweeting about ballot harvesting and bragging about all the ballot harvesting that she's doing. Clear attempt to sort of troll people on that issue. Being in the district and being involved in the election so intimately and closely, obviously you're the major party candidate in the election. Have you seen any direct evidence of that sort of ballot harvesting that that goes on, and specifically the fraudulent type of ballot harvesting where ballots are either bought or sold from people or stolen from people or filled out on behalf of people who may not have otherwise voted?
Well, I have not personally seen it, but let me just say this. I have people talking with me who are intimately involved in that community, and they have sworn that they have seen it, they've known it. In fact, even before the video came out, I had people on my team telling me this, that it was going on. And even prior to that, I had previous Democrat opponents, and this has been going on. The Democratic fraud and stuff and cheating has been going on a long time in Minnesota. I had one opponent of a Democrat candidate. And she has no reason to lie to me, say to me their team had actually witnessed Democrats cutting locks off of ballot boxes and putting new ballots in there. So this has been going on. And, of course, they got the media spinning it as some type of voter suppression issue to cover up this voter fraud that's going on, not only here in Minnesota, but we're pretty sure it's going on across the country. Mm-hmm. But once again, we are told that God does not like ugliness. I'm confident that God is still in control, and I'm confident that sooner or later, we Republicans keep working hard and don't give up, and we work a little smarter, we can eventually overcome these type of obstacles in this lying and cheating and fraud in the Democrat Party, in the media, and everywhere else. And that's why I'm out here, because I think in the long run, we have to do this to save our country. I have to do this to make this world a better world for my kids and grandkids, because these people are very dangerous. People don't understand. I mean, it's not coincidental that Minneapolis used to be a city on the hill that we held up to the world as far as safety and far as economic and things like that. And then we look around now and see the destruction. And people need to understand that this is directly connected to Democratic leftist leadership in our state, in our region, in our city. And sooner or later, they're going to realize it. I just hope it's not too late that these people haven't done permanent damage to the state of Minnesota and to the Twin Cities area.
Well, Lacey Johnson, you've run a hell of a campaign, man. You've worked really hard. You know it. We all know it. It's a steep, steep uphill battle that you're fighting in that district to try to get people to fill out that bubble with an R next to their name. But you've been an exemplary candidate. You've worked your butt off, and it's been a real pleasure to have you on the program. And I hope we'll have opportunities to have you on and reasons to have you on a lot more coming up in the future. Okay.
Okay, I want you guys to know this is not the end of it. I'm a tenacious kind of guy.
Yep, I know.
We're going to take back our state and our city in this district. So thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Anytime, buddy. Take care.
man, he's
such a good guy.
He's a great man.
Such a good guy.
He's a great man. And we've got, you know,
he should be in Congress.
We have all the opportunities in the world. You know, yeah. And I'm sitting back with 6 days just going,
look at your choices.
Oh my gosh.
Ilhan Omar or Lacey Johnson. I mean, it's a no brainer.
I mean, let's go down the list, right? 651-989-5855. All right. We have more Bob Alinsky audio to play. We're not even done with that yet. We got to get to your phone calls. We might, and this might be fun. We might be hearing from our DC correspondent, Andrew Langer, at the bottom of the hour. He, at this very moment, is just now watching the Tucker Carlson interview with the former Biden family business associate, Tony Bobulinski. So we may get his sort of instinctive reaction coming up just after the bottom of the hour.
I support you, John.
It sounded like a solid plan to me.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew continues on. If you missed our interviews earlier with Tyler Kistner and Lacey Johnson, candidates in CD2 and CD5, make sure to check out the iHeartRadio app. Those podcasts will be up shortly after the program is over.
We have more to get to on Tucker Carlson's bombshell interview with Tony Bobulinski, the business partner of the Bidens. We'll get into more of that audio, more of our commentary and your thoughts as well. Might be hearing from our D.C. correspondent, Andrew Langer, coming up, too.
Let's go to the phones, though. Got a lot of people want to chime in. We'll start with Muna calling from Minnesota. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Good morning, and thanks for calling in. Muna?
Hello, Muna.
Yes, hi.
Oh, there you go.
Here we go. Good morning, Muna. Thank you so much for calling in.
Good morning. Hi.
What are your thoughts on Lacey Johnson this morning? I know you wanted to call in. You were listening to the interview and wanted to hear what you had to say.
He has my vote. I want to volunteer for him. Can you let him know that?
I'll make sure to pass that along. when we get done, Muna, I'm going to put you on hold and Sam can get your contact information and I'll make sure you guys get in touch, okay?
Yes.
What about him?
She's a disaster and I don't like her. When he's right, a lot of the community don't like her. The first time I voted for her because, you know, it was historic and blah, blah, blah. But when I see her policy and how she is and how she behaves, absolutely, she's not a representative of us and she's not a representative of this country. So she needs to go.
And it says here on the call screen that
you... I was so surprised and so angry that the primary challenger did not win. Like, he was 10 times better than her.
Yeah. Yeah, he really was. And you're from Somalia, correct?
Yes, I am. I came here when I was 16 in 2003, and I lived here since.
2003?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been here a long time, and I imagine it was probably pretty exciting to see a fellow Somalian rise up and to prominence and get elected.
I'm an RN. I work in a Fairview hospital, and I'm, like, happy to be here. So when I see her complaining about America 24/7 every chance he gets, I'd put a smack her.
what were your expectations when Ilhan first got elected, and since then, you know,
it wasn't even about, like, it was because it's historic. She was like the first Somali, you know, woman and all that. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at that more than, you know, her. I didn't pay attention to her policies or none of that. And most of the community did that too. It was more about historic, like Obama getting elected, first black president. It was something like that.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Absolutely.
But now, no.
But she's been a disappointment since she took office.
Big time.
Okay.
Big time.
Well, Muna, thank you for calling in. It's great to hear from you, okay?
Thank you. Should I stay in the...
Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold, and Sam will get your contact information, and I'll pass it along to Lacey Johnson.
Thank you.
Tony Bobulinski is a Navy veteran and CEO of Sinohawk Holdings, which he described as a partnership between the Chinese operating through the CEFC chairman Yi and the Biden family. He was the recipient of a May 2017 email published by the Post last week that appeared to show Joe Biden's involvement with his son's Hunter's foreign business dealings. And last night he went on Tucker Carlson with a riveting and stunning interview.
The political Moab.
Seriously. Seriously. There's a tweet here before we get back to the phones that I wanted to share really quick. When the Watergate tapes broke, everything in America stopped. all TV channels were doing was breaking news. All newspapers focused on it. The entire buzz throughout the nation was one thing. The fact that this isn't makes me want to take to the streets, said an individual on Twitter. At a bare minimum, it's worthy of just examination with 6 days to go in this election and this extra, and then we're going to get right to the phone, so don't go anywhere. I just want to play this other piece of audio that we haven't gotten to yet, talking about, again, how Bob Alinsky feels about Joe Biden in and of himself.
You know, as I referenced earlier, I'm only sitting here because they have not only have they not gone on record, they've denied it, and they've tarred my family name and a long history of serving this country. I'm insignificant and irrelevant in this discussion. To them, it was always the Biden family. It wasn't Hunter Biden. It wasn't Jim Biden. It was the Biden family, who's obviously led and operated by Joe Biden. And in a document that you guys have, and I think it's been provided to the world, the Chinese referenced that because of their trust in the Biden family, that Chairman Yi and Director Zhang are excited about moving forward in this. And in that document, they reference loaning $5 million to the BD family.
Right.
The BD family is the Biden family. And notice they didn't say we're loaning that money to Oneida Holdings, or we're loaning that money to Tony Bobulinski, or we're loaning that money to James Gillier or Rob Walker. They, once again, not a document generated by me, a document generated by CFC, that they're loaning that money to the Biden family.
What are the implications of this going forward? If Joe Biden is elected president, which could very well happen, how does this constrain his ability to deal with China?
Are you asking for my personal opinion?
I am. I'm asking for your opinion as someone who's worked with the Chinese.
So I think Joe Biden and the Biden family are compromised. Obviously, I've referenced that I held a Q clearance. You're briefed on compromise and, you know, who you're able to talk with and deal and do business with. And I just don't see, given the history here and the facts, how Joe can't be influenced in some manner based on the history that they have here with CFC and stuff like that. So as a citizen and an American taxpayer, I'm very, very concerned.
651-989-5855 is the phone number. Ross from Hudson. Good morning, Ross.
Hello, Ross. Turn your radio down. All right.
Oh, in about 20 seconds, he's going to feel real dumb.
Yeah, I'll put him on hold. We'll check back with him in just a moment.
Want to add this, too, for Daily Caller. We haven't gotten to this part of the story yet. A federal court authorized a FISA warrant, a foreign surveillance warrant, against one of Hunter Biden's Chinese business partners, according to court documents. The existence of a FISA warrant against the Biden associate, Patrick Ho, indicates the federal investigators believed Ho was working covertly as an agent of a foreign government. Ho is the executive, or was an executive, of CFC China Energy, a firm that paid Hunter Biden at least $5 million as part of an investment deal. Biden would later represent Ho during his criminal case. My God in heaven.
Yes, the blinking spy chief of China.
Yes.
That is how Hunter referred to him.
Federal investigators,
spy chief of China,
obtained the FISA warrant against one of Hunter Biden's Chinese associates, suggesting the executive was suspected of acting as a covert agent of a foreign government. Now, Ho was charged in December 18 of 2017 with conspiracy to violate the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and money laundering related to CEFC China Energy contracts in Uganda and Chad. And the one aspect of this that we haven't gotten to yet either is the fact that the FBI has been holding on to the laptop and a lot of this information that was already available there for a really, really long time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of speculation around Christopher Wray and that when President Donald Trump wins re-election, how he may be gone. And it might be in large part because of what we're seeing play out now and the fact that the FBI has been sitting on so much of this evidence this whole time, including when the impeachment hearing was going on for President Donald Trump.
Ross in Hudson, good morning.
Ross. Oh, Ross, we tried.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Ross, we tried.
Let's just listen to Ross's phone for a bit.
No, that's a really bad idea. I don't like that at all.
All right, Ross, that was two tries.
I tried.
651-989-5855. Turn your radio off when you're on hold.
And don't bother calling back.
Let's get back to more of Bob Alinsky, the chairman.
What?
This is a small point, but I can't get over it. So you saw a number of reporters say, again, in an effort to bat away your story, your testimony on this, that the chairman referred to in a bunch of these emails was not Joe Biden. It was, in fact, the government of China. When you see people refer to the chairman thinks this, the chairman thinks that, they're talking about China and not Joe Biden. So I want to put up on the screen. Here is a text message you received from Hunter Biden to you. Hey, Tony, I have an idea. In light of the fact that we are in an impasse of sorts and both James's lawyers and my chairman gave an emphatic no, I think we should all meet in Romania on Tuesday next week. And so you're hearing reporters say that chairman was, in fact, the Chinese government. Here you have Rob Walker responding to you. Clearly there's some confusion over this, and he's saying, I'm going to put this on the screen now. When he said, when Hunter Biden said his chairman, he was talking about his dad.
Correct. There's two chairmen in the story. There's Chairman Yi, who was the chairman of CFC.
Yes.
In that text from Hunter Biden, he was not talking about the chairman of CFC. And what Hunter's referencing there is he spoke with his father, and his father is giving an emphatic no to the ask that I had, which was putting proper governance in place around Oneida Holdings.
So Joe Biden is vetoing your plan for putting stricter governance in the company. I mean, and it's right here in the emails.
Yeah, Tucker, I want to be very careful in front of the American people. That is not me writing that. That is not me claiming that. That is Hunter Biden writing on his own phone, typing in that I spoke with my chairman, referencing his father. If the world thinks that my chairman is not his father, then Hunter Biden would come forward and go on record and state to the world.
But you have the Biden family representatives, Rob Walker, saying right here, May 19th, no. When he said his chairman, he was talking about his dad.
Exactly.
We're actually going to, Sam is going to grab Andrew Langer here just real fast. He's got just a second to give us his quick hot take. He just wrapped up watching the Tucker Carlson interview with Tony Bobulinski, and I think if she gets him on hold fast enough, we can bring him up right now. Andrew Langer on the fly. We were all stunned sitting back watching this live last night on Tucker Carlson. You just watched this interview, of which we've been playing clips all morning long, and we just wanted to get our D.C. correspondent, Andrew Langer, and your hot take on what you just watched.
Well, here's the problem, right? It's not about Hunter Biden. And this is how the media has turned on this, or the narrative on the part of the left. Oh, Hunter Biden's not running for president. You know, Ted Cruz, there's a story in the Hill. Ted Cruz says that the Hunter Biden story, or attacking Hunter Biden, isn't moving any voters. The problem is, this is not about Hunter Biden. This is about Democrats once again selling government policy, or being in a position to sell government policy. This is a major issue here. And it shows that it's not just the Clintons that have sort of developed an industry around their family and political favoritism. This is serious stuff.
Is this a tip of the iceberg kind of situation where we're finally seeing the dealings of what most Democrats have done in D.C. for decades, and it's being exposed at a time when we're 6 days out from this election and the mainstream media simply is going to stick their fingers in their ears and ignore it because of the serious implications of what is being detailed here?
Well, that's exactly it. And they know that the way this works now is if you can wait it out, and you don't put any pressure on the officials, then the story just dies. Mm-hmm. And they're hoping for, you know, that Biden wins and that the Democrats retake the Senate, and this all goes away if the Democrats retake the Senate. This is it. It becomes a sideshow. And it gets into something that, you know, my colleague Jerry Rogers and I have talked about in the past, which is the gaslighting of history. You know, the problem with all of this is that when there's no accountability and there's no final outcome, the left can turn around and say, well, nothing was ever done, therefore there was no story here, right? I can talk about Hillary Clinton and her two aides who were double dipping and acting as consultants for Teneo Holdings, but because there was never any accountability on it, it comes off as a crackpot story, even though all of this is verified. You know, the issues with the IRS and targeting Tea Party organizations, right? The left can come back and say, well, this was a non-story because nobody got punished. This is the problem now.
Was the do you suspect, at least this was my gut reaction last night, do you suspect that the sort of sloppiness and brazenness with which that this deal was sort of put together by the Bidens was done under the idea that Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president anyway? So none of this is ever going to come to light. Nobody's ever going to raise an eyebrow about this. This is a foolproof plan as long as Hillary Clinton wins the presidency.
Well, and Drew, I think it also goes a step further, which is to say that, you know, the Bidens were looking at what the Clintons had managed to do, which was this intimate relationship between policymaking and nonprofit charitable foundations and consulting firms, and that sort of that cozy relationship between the three, and they say, okay, we can do the same thing on our end. We can get clients who are doing consulting. We can create a foundation that maybe Hunter Biden will run, but maybe he won't run, because that's, you know, one of the emails that's out there too, you know, Joe Biden, he may not run for president again, so we'll set this thing up here. That may have been the fatal mistake on the part of Joe Biden. And maybe that's also why this thing didn't really go further than it did, is because Joe Biden, I guess, was contemplating running for president. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And they just, listen, there's nobody as slick as Teflon Bill Clinton. And Joe Biden thought he could be that way, or family Biden thought that they could be that way, and they're just not.
Andrew Langer, thanks for the quick hot take on that, man. We really do appreciate it. We'll let you go back to your morning. We know you're really busy, and we'll keep in touch between now and tomorrow. Maybe we'll get him back on again now that he's had some time and see what transpires over the next 24 hours. We still have a little bit more audio to play, and we're also going to hop back into the Wayback Machine, because there's another sidebar to this whole thing that we've been kind of talking about in the midst of this Tony Bobulinski interview with Tucker Carlson, and that is the media and the silence around the media.
Yeah, that's almost a bigger scandal.
On the same day that the tech giants are going to be in Washington, D.C. to discuss how they've been suppressing stuff like this very story that we've been covering all morning long. AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. I have spectacular news, boy and girl. You guys ready?
Ready.
Breaking. On his show tonight, Tucker Carlson will follow up on last night's bombshell interview with even more audio recordings between Tony Bobulinski and Biden family insiders. We get the sequel tonight, everybody, and I don't know if you know, like, you know, it could be like The Empire Strikes Back, a sequel, so better than the original. Come on now.
I hope so.
Seriously.
I don't know that I mean, it does, this stuff does matter, and it should matter, and the Senate, specifically Senator Ron Johnson and his committee, need to look into this, and you know, regardless of how the election turns out, like, you, like, taking the election out of the equation, there needs to be consequences for what's happened here, for Hunter Biden. I mean, Hunter Biden, by the standards that Trump campaign officials have been held to, Hunter Biden should already be in solitary confinement.
No, I totally agree. And there's only so much. Look, I think there's only so much noise that can be made from this before there's got to be a response, right? I mean,
no,
they can.
No, I don't know that there has to be, because we're this close. We're just days away. We're 6 days away. I mean, he can go radio silent on this for 6 days. If it were 6 weeks, maybe it'd be a different story. But it's 6 days. He can just go radio silent and say, you know, smear, disinformation, Trump has nothing else to talk about, I refuse to even acknowledge this. He can do that for 6 days, especially when he's got so much compliant media on his side that is willing to pretend that this story is complete nonsense, right? So yes,
he
doesn't have to respond.
If
he wins, that's the real problem. If he wins the election, which would be safe to assume that would mean a Democrat majority in the House. You would be safe to assume that probably some Senate seats flipped the Democrats' way as well. I mean, it goes nowhere, and that's what scares me more than anything else. It just dies. And don't think for a second that Joe Biden is the only one who does these sort of things. Andrew Langer
articulated
it perfectly well. This is the Clinton Foundation model, right? You get all this money coming in from other countries. You basically gets laundered, set up as a charitable foundation, yada, yada, right? And Biden has been doing this for a very long time. The Clintons have been doing this for a very long time. And they aren't the only ones. I'm sure there are plenty of Republicans that have engaged in similar schemes. I hope that they're all gone by now. And if they're not, they need to be gone.
Joe Biden hasn't even been asked and answered the question on just the surface level. You said over and over again that you had no dealings and didn't talk about business with Hunter Biden. And that has been, you know, that has been proven to be a lie every day for a different reason for the past, you know, like week. Here's another piece of audio. This was towards the end of the interview last night. And again, this is Tony Bobulinski. He's a whistleblower who's a former business partner of Hunter Biden and the Biden family.
You've told your story in a very public way. What do you expect the consequences for you and your family will be?
So my focus right now is not the consequences on me. I'm actually trying to be selfless in this discussion. I think the consequences our country faces, that average American voter that's thinking about what presidential candidate they pick today or have picked over the prior 2 weeks or in the future all the way up to the election. I'm doing this for them, not for my family, not for any money. I'm doing this out of a patriotic duty to our country based on my military background and my grandfather's background. So other people can determine the facts and what matters and how they want to vote. But I had to go on record because they chose to sort of mar up my name. So I have a former SEAL team protecting my family. I'm not at home right now. And I'll travel the next 4 years if I have to. I had to do this.
Are you worried?
Of course I'm worried. I've gotten death threats, calls. Obviously, I sat with the FBI. They assured me I would more than be protected by them when and if and needed. But I think I'll slowly become irrelevant in this discussion because the facts are so powerful and so necessary that hopefully I'll just sort of go stage left, and hopefully our government and the appropriate people, the Biden family, will go on record and basically provide facts to the American people.
This is a small point, but I can't get over it. So you saw a number of reporters say, again, in an effort to bat away your story, your testimony on this, that the chairman referred to in a bunch of these emails was not Joe Biden. It was, in fact, the government of China. When you see people refer to the chairman thinks this, the chairman thinks that, they're talking about China and not Joe Biden. So I want to put up on the screen. Here is a text message you received from Hunter Biden to you. Hey, Tony, I have an idea. In light of the fact that we are in an impasse of sorts and both James's lawyers and my chairman gave an emphatic no, I think we should all meet in Romania on Tuesday next week. And so you're hearing reporters say that chairman was, in fact, the Chinese government. Here you have Rob Walker responding to you. Clearly there's some confusion over this, and he's saying, I'm going to put this on the screen now, when Hunter Biden said his chairman, he was talking about his dad.
Correct. There's two chairmen in the story. There's Chairman Yi, who was the chairman of CFC.
Yes.
In that text from Hunter Biden, he was not talking about the chairman of CFC. And what Hunter's referencing there is he spoke with his father, and his father is giving an emphatic no to the ask that I had, which was putting proper governance in place around Oneida Holdings.
So Joe Biden is vetoing your plan for putting stricter governance in the company. I mean, and it's right here in the emails.
Yeah, Tucker, I want to be very careful in front of the American people. That is not me writing that. That is not me claiming that. That is Hunter Biden writing on his own phone, typing in that I spoke with my chairman, referencing his father. If the world thinks that my chairman is not his father, then Hunter Biden would come forward and go on record and state to the world.
But you have the Biden family representatives, Rob Walker, saying right here, May 19th, no. When he said his chairman, he was talking about his dad.
Exactly.
How this is wall-to-wall news coverage in a world where they tried to insinuate that Trump was bribing the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Over an innocuous
to
comment.
Try to dig up dirt,
right?
On Joe Biden, which
right.
That dirt was not buried very deep.
Russian
that did not require a whole lot of digging.
Russian collusion. I mean, I said it before. My dear Lord in heaven, where have we landed when the media is just completely silent on this 6 days.
Yeah.
When millions have already voted.
I know. It's sad.
It is incredible.
It's sad. Mark in St. Louis Park, you got 30 seconds.
Real quick, guys. You keep saying if the Democrats win, Biden wins Senate, House. William Barr's got 2 months after the election and before the inauguration day to appoint a special prosecutor, both in the Durham case and in this case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can do whatever he wants. So I'm going to listen.
I have nothing to add. I hope that happens if things go their way. Al in Edina, 30 seconds, quickly.
No, I guess I had basically the same question. I was actually thinking about can the U.S. Population or somebody representative of the U.S. population saying we need to continue investigating this no matter who's in charge. Can we do something like that?
It's not over by any stretch. Yeah. After next week, it's not. They're right, and they're absolutely right. We'll have a lot more to say on tomorrow's show. Right now, Sam, what did I learn?
I learned a lot today. I learned in the top five that Google searches for "Can I Change My Vote" have spiked this week. That was around 6:40, and then at 7:40 this morning, we had Tyler Kisner came on the show. He's a CD2 candidate. I learned his thoughts on a big story this week about the Supreme Court rejecting the delay of a vote in his congressional race. And then after 8 a.m., CD5 candidate Ilhan Omar challenger Lacey Johnson came on the show, and I learned more about him and his thoughts on some things that Ilhan Omar has said recently. You can check out all hours of the show by finding our podcast on the iHeartRadio app. Just search for Justice and Drew.
Tomorrow should be fun. We got Jesse Kelly. We got Katie Pavlich. Both of those interviews should be a lot of fun tomorrow. Stick around 6 to 9. Have a great day.